Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, coming to you live from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Monday, September 30th, 2024. An Islamic Sheikh is allegedly slaughtered in South Sudan's capital, Juba.
Friday evening at around 9, when I received a call from my younger brother, and he told me my brother has been attacked by some criminals and he has been chopped and is likely dead. Then I couldn't understand whether it was really true or not.
And the commissioner of Thorit County takes up the root causes of tensions between two communities in eastern Equatorial State.
Fear of the chiefs to identify those people because they will be harassing by the youth that if you identify us, we may kill you also. But the security forces are working very hard day and night to identify those people because nobody is above the law.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The family of a muezzin who was allegedly slaughtered on Friday evening at a mosque in Juba's Nimratalata residential area say they want justice delivered after their son was killed in cold blood. The Islamic Council of South Sudan says the suspect had mental problems after fleeing the conflict in Sudan. For VOA News, Dennis Logonyi reports from Juba.
Sheikh Musa Abakar Mulu was allegedly hacked to death by an assailant who had been staying at the Nimratalata Mosque. The suspect also assaulted Ahmed Babikel, a Sudanese national who was treated at a hospital in Juba. Ahmed says the suspected assailant had been kicked out of the mosque for causing trouble, but he kept coming back.
What happened exactly is that this person had previously been fighting with me and all the people who are sleeping in the mosque without any clear reasons. Even if he does not know you, he can still fight you. Sometimes he looks at you in the face and asks you to follow him outside. This is something he has been doing. For the past 3 days, he had been looking at me and I have also been looking at him. And that's when the Islamic Council decided to chase him out of the mosque.
Baya James is the younger brother of the muezzin who was killed. He says the family is still in shock, adding that he wants to know what led to his brother's death.
Friday evening at around 9, when I received a call from my younger brother, and he told me my brother has been attacked by some criminals and he has been chopped and is likely dead. Then I couldn't understand whether it was really true or not. I had to wait after morning that when as a family come together, then we went to the scene. Recently in Atalata, at the mosque, we found the mosque has been locked and we were referred to go to the police station in Melekia Central Police.
Major Liz Wilson Simon, the police deputy spokesperson, confirmed the suspect has been arrested.
The criminal case was investigated at Central Police Division, Melekia as we call it, and the suspect was arrested by the police and the investigation is going on. As the police, we know that we have our duration which has been given to us according to the law, but you know sometime also we need the case to be completed. There is some procedure going on and then after the completing, it will be taken to the court.
Sheikh Walid Jumblad Walid, secretary of the Islamic Council, Central Equatorial State, says the muezzin was killed while performing his missionary work.
We condemn and denounce in the strongest terms and words this barbaric behavior, and the perpetrator must be brought to a fair trial immediately after the completion of the investigation of the facts in accordance with the human and legal norms stipulated in all judicial documents.
The Islamic Council says the attacker had mental health problems, but Baya says he is not convinced the suspect had a medical condition.
In my own opinion, Umar seemed to be doing that act deliberately, because when you look at the pictures and the panga he bought new, he really organized it and he had that in mind. And I also have a blame on the administration of the mosque to have not taken charge of the major administrative control inside the mosque, because it is unfortunate that it happened inside the mosque, a place called Holy.
The late Sheikh Musa Abakar Mulu was in charge of the Muslim community in Kajokeji County and at the same time served at the Lire Mosque before he was assigned to Juba's Nimratalata Mosque. He was laid to rest on Saturday at the Muslim graveyard in Konyokonyo. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
From Juba, we move to Jonglei State, where the police say they have launched a crackdown on illegal drugs and alcoholic abuse in Bor town after the governor banned sales of alcoholic beverages and drugs 2 weeks ago. Authorities say many young people in the area are abusing drugs such as the painkiller Tramadol. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
A 27-year-old Bor town resident who identifies himself only as Dot Dot is chewing Mairungu leaves, a stimulant banned in South Sudan. He says he started chewing Mairungu leaves, which is also called Mira, to help him forget hunger and remain positive amid South Sudan's economic hardships.
It gives me great feelings. Once I eat it, I become very happy and start building my own tall buildings in my head. Once it is finished in my head, all my building disappears. When I eat Mira, I feel happy. But once I have eaten it, the sun goes down well until I go to bed.
Jonglei State Governor Majub Bialtruk issued an order banning the sale and consumption of alcoholic beverages and some illicit drugs. Nyamar Lung, Jonglei State Information Minister, says widespread drug abuse among the youth in the state capital Bor prompted the ban.
When these young boys take these drugs, they reach to the state of not actually knowing themselves. It takes them out of their correct state of mind. They act crazy. It's like they don't become human beings anymore. So this is why the drug was banned from the market.
Lone says the governor also restricted the sale of some medicinal drugs, such as Tramadol and Codeine cough syrups, which are among the substances youth abuse in the state. Bol Chow, medical director at Bor State Hospital, says medical practitioners are aware of drug abuse in the state and take the order seriously.
For the codeine, somebody will use the 100 mil and then just take the entire bottle. If you go to these areas, these street children, is what they'll buy and then just consume. That order for the governor is something I think that is welcomed, and we as the health workers that are working here, I think we welcome that. Once written by a doctor or a health worker, is something that is intended for medicinal use.
Major General John Bach, Jonglei State Police Commissioner, says drug abuse has increased the number of crimes among the young people in Bor. He says the police are implementing the governor's order.
They are going to inspect all the shops and all the houses where these alcohol are there. It will be banned. It's damaging our children and society. This is the one who encourage them fighting each other and killing each other. The boys who are in the school, they left their school and they are consuming this alcohol.
A drug dealer who refused to be named for fear of arrest says he had no better options than drugs.
It's not all about being after drugs. The one that, you know, when you have no choice in life, you know, You have to commit yourself, you know, just to be in the streets and, you know, just to make your mind relax, you know, because you have nothing to do. Suppose if you got a job, like right now you're working, you have no time for drugs. But people like us, we have no jobs, no anything.
Cannabis or bangi is the most profitable and prevalent drug in the country. Many communities grow cannabis, and some is smuggled through the Nadapal and Numuli border points. Cocaine and synthetic drugs do not appear to play a prominent role in South Sudan illicit drug market. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Torit, where revenge killings are common across some communities in that part of South Sudan. Authorities in Eastern Equatoria State Torit County say they are working to defuse tension between two communities in Khiala and Haforere to prevent more revenge attacks. For VOA News, Kaltuma Vanessa reports from Torit.
The commissioner of Torit County and a committee for peace is engaging chiefs in Khiala and Haforere to address the root cause of ongoing tension in the areas. Omoli John Solomon, Payam administrator of Hiala, says high bride dowry prices, poverty and illiteracy among young men and women fuels revenge attack in the state.
Many died. Kiala, many died. And other villages, even on top of that, in Kiala Payam, they were in problem also. Many people died because of cattle raiding and the revenge killing. People from Kabure went, and one person was killed, and another person was wounded from Kiala. The five who went there, they're supposed to be arrested.
Patrick Aiteng, chief of the Havarere community, is urging the government to disarm civilians. He says small arm proliferation among local citizens has fueled conflict between communities in the state.
Government should stop the supply of guns and bullets to civilians. Let the bullets be with the government. If there are no bullets, the criminals will not get a chance to go and kill someone. That is what I can tell the government, to stop those supplying guns and bullets for civilians. This is why we have a lot of problem killing and robbing properties of others.
Galdino Ohide Ojok, chief of the Hiala Boma, says young men from his community refused to attend community peace meeting, citing lack of a neutral venue.
The last meeting we had in Tirangore, youths from Hapuriere went for a raid while people were in the meeting. That is why Hiala want the meeting to be done in the Payam headquarters, which is Hiala, because security forces are there to protect everyone.
Jen Asai Filhano, a resident of Tirangore in Hiala Payam, is calling on state authorities to apprehend criminals in his village.
When someone from Havarere killed a person from Hiala, the criminal should have been arrested, but they claim it was an accident. Yes, if it was an accident, he should have handed himself to the authorities so that this problem will be solved and pay for his crime. But why did he run? These are the things that increase revenge killings.
Torit County Commissioner Christopher Andrews says security forces have challenges identifying local criminals.
Fear of the chiefs to identify those people, because they will be harassing by the youth, that if you identify us, we may kill you also. But the security forces are working very hard day and night to identify those people, because nobody is above the law. As I have mentioned it, that we will not stop preaching the peace to our communities, and especially here at Payam, because we're still arranging for another day so that we gather to the absent village to attend also.
Many peace dialogue initiated by different leaders in Hiala have done very little to diffuse tension between the two communities. Since South Sudan's independence in 2011, intercommunal violence has erupted in several areas, resulting in the killing of an untold number of people across South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa reporting from Eastern Equatorial State Capital, Torit.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, tensions are high in the Middle East. Find out why after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Both the U.S. Republican and Democratic vice presidential nominees have been preparing for their debate that will be hosted by CBS News Tuesday evening in New York City. VOA's Veronica Baldras Iglesias looks at the policies J.D. Vance and Tim Walz might focus on and whether the debate itself could impact the outcome of the U.S. presidential race.
Republican vice presidential nominee J.D. Vance recently shared what his primary message to voters will be when he debates Democratic rival Tim Walz on Tuesday.
That the candidacy, the team of substance, the team that actually has a record that we're proud of instead of we're running away from, and the team that actually has a plan is the team of Trump Vance.
Republican Representative Tom Emmer has been helping the Ohio senator prepare for the 90-minute debate that will be hosted in New York by CBS News. Emmer appeared Sunday on ABC's This Week show.
He could talk about the economy that Donald Trump fixed and that Harris and Biden broke. He can talk about the border that Trump fixed and they broke. And once he understands that Tim Walz is just going to try and deflect and go into this folksy whatever, he'll hold him accountable.
The Minnesota governor has also been reportedly sharpening his debate skills. His messaging to voters often centers on how consequential the November 5th election is.
It's all on the line, not just for the next 4 years, but for the next 40 years.
Reproductive rights will probably be one of Walz's strongest lines of attack against Vance, says John Mark Hansen, political science professor at the University of Chicago. He spoke with VOA via Skype.
Vance may be pressed on whether, as president, Trump would sign an abortion ban or a very, very short period where abortions could be performed nationwide.
Voters shouldn't expect the VP nominees to provide a breakdown of their campaign's proposed policies, Hansen noted.
The debates are always more show than they are substance. Candidates have become very, very skilled at pivoting away from the question they were asked and instead addressing an issue that they want to address.
Voters who tune in Tuesday could get a sense of whether the vice presidential nominees provide them with a sense of comfort. But unless there is some kind of meltdown, Hansen says it is not likely the debate will move the presidential race's needle. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
From Washington, we move to Middle East, where Israel unleashed a series of overnight attacks in Lebanon and announced the killing of another high-level Hezbollah commander. The strikes aim to further rattle Hezbollah after airstrikes that killed the group's chief, Hassan Nasrallah. VOA's Arish Arabsadi has more.
Smoke still rises Sunday from what's left of high-rise apartments after an Israeli strike in the suburbs of Beirut on Friday. The Israeli military says it was targeting the leader of the U.S.-designated terror group Hezbollah. The group on Saturday confirmed the death of its leader, Hassan Nasrallah. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu labeled Nasrallah as someone set on destroying Israel.
Nasrallah was not another terrorist. He was the terrorist. He was the axis of the axis, the central engine of Iran's axis of evil. He and his people were the architects of the plan to destroy Israel.
Meanwhile, Hezbollah's biggest backer, Iran, raised a black flag atop the Imam Reza's shrine following Nasrallah's death. The sign of mourning came as Hezbollah issued a statement saying Nasrallah joined his fellow martyrs while vowing to, quote, continue holy war against the enemy and in support of Palestine. As hundreds of families now sleep in the Beirut streets, joining what the Lebanese government says are 1 million displaced people, the Israel Defense Forces released a series of videos claiming to show strikes against dozens of Hezbollah targets in Lebanon. Israel says it warned civilians to get out of the way. But the country's leader blasted Israel's offensive. Lebanese caretaker Prime Minister Najib Mikati speaking on Tel Liban as provided by AP.
Unfortunately, the law of the jungle that controls the world has made the Israeli enemy stall all efforts for a ceasefire and continue its war against Lebanon because it does not care about the law or international legitimacy.
Overnight attacks this weekend continued in Beirut, prompting concern for what may follow. Meanwhile, hundreds of demonstrators in Baghdad protested Nasrallah's killing and attempted to breach the fortified Green Zone in Iraq, home to the U.S. Embassy. White House National Security spokesperson John Kirby, speaking Sunday on ABC's This Week, as provided by the social media platform X.
We're watching this very, very closely to see how, if and how, Hezbollah and or Iran may react, as well as the militia groups in Iraq and Syria. We have to be prepared for some sort of response. We have to make sure that we are ready, and we are. We believe we have the force capability we need in the region, but it's not clear right now. Too soon to know.
Lebanon's health ministry reports more than 1,000 Lebanese dead and 6,000 wounded in the past 2 weeks. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
A new global Gallup poll released Tuesday shows South Africa is one of the countries in the world where citizens feel the least safe working alone. Kate Bartlett spoke to people on the streets of Johannesburg about why they don't feel safe in their own country.
32-year-old bartender Gugu Zakaza was mugged by two men while walking home from the grocery store one day. She says that was the last time she risked walking anywhere alone.
But I'd never walk around these streets. Firstly, because obviously the, you know, South Africans' crime status is very, very high. And also it's not just safe for a woman to just be walking around at night, because obviously we might be taken advantage of. So rather safe than sorry.
She is not alone. Karabo Faith, 23, says she no longer walks anywhere by herself.
I almost got mugged at night when I came from Groove with my friends and we're walking going home. So this other guy was like, hey, give us your phone. And then luckily these police officers came through, so they never took our phones. But we were scared.
The latest Gallup poll on global safety asked people in 140 countries how safe they felt walking alone. Some 70% of South Africans responded that they did not feel safe. Ranking in the bottom three countries, which also included Ecuador and Liberia. Gallup is a global analytics and advisory firm. Gallup's Julie Ray says sub-Saharan Africa has had low rankings in the annual poll for years. The survey found feelings of safety have declined more here than any other region.
The region has ranked among the least safe in terms of people's perceptions for almost two decades.
By contrast, citizens in Kuwait, Singapore, and Norway said they all felt the safest, with between 8 and 1% feeling unsafe. Women in South Africa typically feel less safe than men, Ray said, though more men also feel unsafe now too. Confidence in police in sub-Saharan Africa is also lower than average, she said. Asked for comment on the report, Athlenda Mate, spokesperson for the South African Police Services, said they were working on heightening police visibility.
We are making inroads in clamping down all forms of criminality, and the main goal is to ensure that we make South Africa a much safer place to live in so that people can walk freely.
South Africa has notoriously high crime rates. According to the latest police statistics, between April and June alone, over 6,000 murders and 9,000 rapes were recorded. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
That's all from us this Monday, September 30th, 2024, when I leave you with Fally Ipupa featuring Buba and the song Kinami.
C'est pas na, on est venu faire danser tout pana,
assistant, elle aime que je lui mette dans l'insulte. Coupé, décalé, Afghanistan, je frappe. Respecte-moi, c'est pas une affaire de rap. J'irai pas qu'il casse si je roule en Lada. Si t'as pas Gunta, Walluna, t'as quitté là-bas. Il faudra tout avaler, ça va aller. Piraterie ne s'arrêtera jamais. Pas dans la tête, pas la meilleure est partie, mais la plus efficace. Paris, je t'aime, Zlatan est parti quand même. J'ai pas eu ma dédicace. Pas dans la tête, pas la meilleure est partie, mais la plus efficace. Paris, je t'aime, Zlatan est parti quand même. J'ai pas eu ma dédicace.
On est là pour faire danser tout pana, tout pana. Y'a des femmes du champagne ici, c'est pana, c'est pana. On est venu faire danser tout pana, tout pana. On est parti pour toute la night. Ooh, mama, yeah. Hassan.
We have been listening to Fally Ipupa, who is a Congolese star, featuring Buba and the song Kinami. For more on our programs, visit www.voaafrica.com. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer Kwame Ofori and engineer Killer Williams, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
1 year into Sudan's brutal civil war that has killed over 20,000 people and displaced some 13 million, the fighting between the Sudanese Armed Forces, or SAF, and the paramilitary RSF, Rapid Support Forces, coalesced around El Shafer, the capital of Sudan's Darfur region. The city, which has been a major destination of Sudanese refugees since the conflict began, is the SAF's last stronghold in the region, and as such has been under siege by the RSF since April. Since April, El Shafer and its surroundings have been the scene of fierce fighting. On September 12th, the hostilities escalated as the RSF launched a multi-pronged attack on the city and the Sudanese armed forces. The United States is deeply concerned about reports of a full-on assault and serious escalation in the RSF's months-long siege on El Fasher, said Robert Wood, U.S. Alternative Representative for Special Political Affairs at the UN.
We are appalled by reports of civilian deaths. The fighting is reportedly taking on an increasingly ethnic and tribal dimension, exacerbating the atrocity risk. We are equally alarmed that the Sudanese armed forces have responded with increased and widespread aerial bombardments of the area.
As can be expected, the siege and fierce fighting pose an existential threat to civilians everywhere within the region. The situation is particularly bad in Zamzam Camp, 15 kilometers south of El Fasher. Not only are the 500,000 internally displaced people living there suffering from famine and flooding, but they were also forced there by the Sudanese army. This needless horror must stop, said Ambassador Wood. The United States calls on the SAF and the RSF to pull back their forces, facilitate unhindered humanitarian access, and re-engage in negotiations to end this war.
The United States calls on the parties to agree to a localized humanitarian pause for El Fasher and the surrounding areas, including Zamzam IDP camp, to allow aid to surge in and innocent civilians to flee.
Quoting President Joe Biden, Ambassador Wood said, "Let it be clear. The United States will not abandon our commitment to the people of Sudan, who deserve freedom, peace, and justice. We call for all parties to this conflict to end this violence and refrain from fueling it, for the future of Sudan and for all of the Sudanese people."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. Thank you.